Hi, I'm Darren Butler and welcome to Leave Your Mark podcast series. The podcast series has featured profile interviews with sports stars and community leaders telling their stories of how they left their mark on the world and rose above their struggles with addiction. Today on episode 4, we are in Muirchertain, County Kilkenny, as part of the ongoing work of the Drug Awareness Initiative, and our thanks to David Conway and the members of the Drug Initiative for the invitation. Today, I'm delighted to say I am joined by a number of students from Collage de Cuaisceartaigh who are leaving their mark on their community. They have gathered questions as part of a Muirchertain Parish Drug Awareness Programme from their fellow students and are here to ask me some of those questions, get the information and education to complement the ongoing work of the teachers. So we're going to start with Katie Tolan. What's your first question, Katie?
What are the signs of drug addiction?
Signs of drug addiction is, it's a very difficult question to answer. I suppose one thing I will say is it's important to remember that it could be a combination of some of the examples that I'm going to give, because we could often find ourselves feeling some of these feelings and moods. So it's very important to say that while these would be signs, they're not the definitive. So sudden changes in mood and behaviour is always one that would stick out to a lot of people who are working in addiction services. Easily constantly fatigued, a lot of tiredness, a decline in personal appearance and health and hygiene can always be a sign. A lot of secretiveness, so a lot of whispering, a lot of kind of going behind people's backs. Unfortunately, depression can be a big part of it, because some of the substances that people are using can bring on depression. And increased missed days, whether it be from school or work, would always be a sign, especially if these would be unlike the person to be missing days from school or work. A loss of appetite, and probably one of the main ones would be stealing money or goods. So that could be excessive spending or money borrowing and deterioration of long friendships and relationships. So it's funny because it's very similar for the signs of drug abuse and the signs of addiction. They're very similar, but it would always be a combination of more than one that would have people maybe being a little bit concerned. Certainly sudden mood swings and, you know, people looking like they're maybe spaced out, sleepy, or angry outbursts that are not like them. And often, unfortunately, when money starts to go missing from especially family members, that can be a big sign that there's an issue within the home. And often that can be one of the signs of somebody in addiction. Okay, so thank you, Katie. And question number 2.
What are the most popular drugs in Ireland?
The question, it doesn't mention legal drugs, which I'm sure that was meant. But it does give me an opportunity, I suppose, to remind everyone that alcohol is the most used drug and the drug that causes the most pressure on our health service. According to the National Research Board, cannabis remains the most commonly used illegal drug in Ireland. It's followed by ecstasy and then cocaine. I suppose when you're looking for statistics, it can be very difficult at times to get statistics, especially in Ireland. So sometimes you can get them from Great Britain or maybe Australia and America are quite good, but certainly with our own National Research Board, they do a lot of work getting us these statistics and that, and cannabis seems to be the main one, that most illegal one. But again, alcohol is the most used and nicotine would be follow that, and of course we're having issues with vaping now. So by the three of them are legal drugs, they would probably be the most popular in Ireland, or they definitely would be, but certainly for illegal drugs, cannabis remains the most commonly used drug, and that's for all age groups. There's no cohort that is using cannabis more than others. Cannabis is being used by under 18s and adults and into later age as well. Okay, Katie, and your third question.
Where do people get drugs?
It's funny because a lot of young people often get their first drug from someone they know. Over time, people used to have an idea that drugs were sold down dark alleyways or by shady looking people or strangers. But today, the reality is many drug dealers are well known to the communities and in the communities. The dark web on the internet is also an outlet where people can buy drugs, and we're finding that quite a lot with psychological drugs, there's a lot of that coming through the dark web. Today, many of the crime gangs we hear about in the media are mostly responsible for importing the illegal drugs into Ireland. The crime bosses who are responsible for bringing the drugs to Ireland rarely ever even see them or handle the drugs. They would not even probably even see the shipment come in. They would certainly never touch them. This is done. There's a chain within the command of the gang members. And often, unfortunately, it's those in addiction are the ones that are actually selling the drugs on the streets, just to feed their own habit at times. There's no village or town or city in Ireland that doesn't have drugs readily available. And in a future podcast in 2023, we will have a representative from the Garda Drug Unit, and he will give us much more information on the drug situation in Ireland. But certainly, we need to be very aware that a lot of people are getting drugs being offered to them either by someone they know or someone they trust. Unfortunately, that's how drug dealers get us involved in drugs, by building up a friendship, building up trust, and then we can find ourselves very much in trouble then. Okay, thank you, Katie, for your questions. And I'll move on now to Georgia and ask you, Georgia, what would your first question be?
My first question is, what's the most addictive drug?
Okay, I wonder, will this surprise anyone? The most addictive drug we have on the streets of Ireland is actually heroin. It's the most dangerous drug available. And the reason being is the dose that can cause an overdose can be as small as just 5 times the amount that it takes for someone to get the high from taking the drug. So that can be a big issue for, and that's how a lot of people over the years would have overdosed and unfortunately died from heroin, because getting the right amount, just enough to get a high without overdosing, can often be very difficult. So certainly heroin would be the most addictive. The most addictive drug that's used in Ireland, I suppose cocaine is certainly becoming very, very, very popular, and it's very addictive. A lot of people would kind of question that and say that cocaine wouldn't be addictive, or you couldn't become addicted to it. But certainly there's plenty of statistics that show you can. You know, and of course that makes you anxious and panicky and paranoid. The University of Galway in 2019 did some research into addiction in Ireland and found that there was 822 under 18s who presented for addiction, and the majority were in treatment for cannabis. So again, there's a myth, cannabis is not addictive. A lot of people would have that myth. And stats like this one from Galway, to think that 822 and the majority were in for treatment for cannabis, shows that it is obviously an addictive drug. The one thing about cannabis and weed and all the different variations of it is that it's so strong compared to 20 years ago. I'd often be in schools or communities and I'd be told, well, I know somebody who smoked it 20 years ago and they're okay today and they don't have any addiction and they have no mental health issues. But you know, the difference today is it's very different. The drug today is no longer grown in the countries that have a natural climate. Now it's grown using chemicals to quicken its growth in unnatural settings like Ireland. There's plenty of grow houses being found in Ireland and plenty more out there. And it's the chemicals that are sprayed on the cannabis and the weed in the grow houses that can cause very much an added effect on the user, because we don't know what these chemicals are that are being used to help it grow quicker. So, you know, the smoker, whoever's smoking the cannabis, will end up obviously ingesting the chemical that's being used to help it grow. So it's a different drug today than it has been over many years, and it's very important for people to understand that, you know, just because somebody used it 20 years ago and say it's safe, it's certainly not, and it's a different one now, and lots of different variations and strengths that we have to be very careful of. Okay, thank you, Georgia. Your next question.
Well, I want to know, why do people take drugs when they know they're dangerous?
Yeah, that's a good question. I suppose there's lots of reasons why people take drugs without one particular one standing out. There's not actually one that I can give you a definitive one answer. People can take drugs for many reasons. Sometimes they would say to forget their troubles or their struggles, get away from a situation. But as we all know, these situations are always waiting for the user when they eventually come down from the high. And not only just having to deal with the come down or the hangover from a drug, you know, anxiety can be heightened dramatically during that time. So if somebody is struggling with an issue, it could be anything from their sexuality to issues in school, to issues in their workplace, or just issues at home that they're trying to forget. You know, often, you know, turning to drugs or certainly illegal drugs that haven't been prescribed can cause a lot of pressure and anxiety, and can only heighten the issue that they've actually tried to hide away from. Peer pressure is certainly one reason. And while we often use the words peer pressure with young people quite a lot, it can be a cause for adults just as much at times. I suppose young people often feel like they're bulletproof, and they have this idea that that won't happen to me if they see something going on. And also adults can also have that kind of thinking. You know, an example of that would be, we see road safety adverts and they can be very disturbing, very graphic. While it may have some impact on the numbers of road traffic accidents or even deaths, we know there are still people who speed or take chances with seatbelts and that. So while it does work at times, I think the graphic images, you know, only help. They certainly don't stop people experimenting with drugs, even though they know they're dangerous. Also, we see graphic images more recently on cigarette packaging. And certainly that works to an extent where it might stop people from starting up, taking up smoking. But for those who are already in the addiction, them graphic images don't really have much of an impact at all. Education and awareness programs such as this podcast and the work that we do in the schools will all help. But I suppose we always have to realize that we will always have people, whether they're young or old, who do involve themselves in risky behavior, and that's just their way. And I suppose, you know, sometimes maybe podcasts like this can help take away that feeling of, oh, I didn't know it would do that to me. Should they end up in a situation where they're in danger of that? So I suppose risky behavior is a big one, but there's a number of reasons why people take drugs even though they're dangerous. Okay, Georgia, your next one.
How quickly can you get addicted to drugs, and what are the effects on the brain?
Okay, the brain is often likened to an incredibly complex and intricate computer. So instead of the electrical circuits that we see on computers and silicon chips that control our electric devices like our phones and computers and games and that, the brain consists of billions of small cells, and these are called neurons. So these are organized into circuits and networks. These circuits are used for the brain to send signals to the body to perform the everyday functions that we just take for granted, whether it be walking, sleeping, drinking. When these circuits are interrupted by a drug, which is what happens when somebody takes an illegal drug, the drugs interfere with the way the neurons send, receive, and process the signals via our brain. So some of the chemicals in drugs can actually mimic the brain's own chemicals. But what they do, they don't activate the brain the same way. So it can lead to abnormal messages being sent through the network. Often when someone takes drugs, the brain is sending signals that it likes this. So if you could imagine, if you're at a football match or you're at maybe a competition like a dance class or anything that you might have an interest in, and you win or your team wins, you get this natural high. And your brain is telling you it likes this, which hence we often go back. Same with playing, even if it's only a new phone, we get this natural high from getting it and our brain tells us it likes it. Well, drugs can give that message to the body that the brain likes this and keep doing it, and hence why the addiction becomes very, very quick, because our brain is continually telling us it likes it and do it. What happens then is our body gets used to a certain amount of drugs, and it doesn't give the high that maybe the very first time we took drugs. So what often happens is the drug user is trying to chase that high. The drug user is trying to find the high that they got the very first time. And in doing so, they keep increasing the amount of drugs they take. And that's where we can lead then to addiction and also into overdose as well. So the brain is very, very important when it comes to drugs. And we often see, unfortunately, I know it's in movies of that, but it's very true, where we see people who are in addiction and they're often stumbling or slurring their words or not even walking properly. And that's the brain has been damaged from the drug so much that it's no longer sending that signal to the body to telling it what to say. It's delayed and it's getting slurred. And the same with somebody who may be struggling to walk or that. So drugs alter important brain areas that are normal life supporting functions to us, and it can mask the negative effects because it's telling us, it's driving the compulsive use that can then lead us to addiction. Okay, Georgia, your next question, please.
If drugs are made legal, would that stop drug dealing and gangland murders?
Okay, yeah, you would think possibly. I suppose it's a very complex question to break down. There are many different arguments for legalizing drugs, first of all, and this is actually one that we hear quite a lot, especially in the current climate where we see an awful lot of gangland culture and a lot of deaths on through gun culture as well. I suppose for time purposes, I'll concentrate on just the question that you asked. But I do think there's room for this question of legalization of drugs to be answered on a future podcast by someone who believes in that argument. And we will certainly look into that next year. Drug-related crimes may decrease if we legalize drugs, but other crimes, especially violent crimes, are probably more likely to rise. They certainly may increase if certain drugs are easier to get. As we know, some people can be psychologically affected, and often violent actions by people under the influence of drugs are often said to be very much out of character. You would hear that quite a lot in the courts, where if somebody's brought for before the judge for a very violent crime, they've never been involved in anything violent before, and it was the influence of the drugs that brought that on. So I suppose that's one thing that we would have to think of, should it be legalized. In addition, I believe a black market for drugs will also continue even with the legalization, because if we legalize drugs, there would still have to be some ceiling on the strengths and how much we make available per individual. So we couldn't have like a shop where somebody can go in and buy cocaine and just buy as much cocaine as they want, because the government wouldn't allow that, because that would be irresponsible if that person went off and overdosed, and then you can imagine the family then going asking, well, why did you sell him so much on that, or her so much? So the likelihood is there will be an illegal drug dealing going on, because we would have then the promise of stronger drugs, because people who are buying them legal will probably eventually, their bodies will get used to the dosage that they're allowed by, or the maximum dose they're allowed by. So the chances are we would have illegal drug dealers who could come along and say, well, I can give you a lot stronger ones. And that would lead to the black market that we have still now. And I suppose unlimited quantities of drugs versus the legal ones, you know, whereas if everyone was to stick to it being legal and that you were only allowed so much, well, it could possibly work. But we know that a lot of these drug dealers use this. It's their business. They don't care about any of our health. And they will always be there to sell more than the government would allow, and stronger ones that they allow. So it's a really good question around legalization. And as I said, there is a lot of positives around it, and a lot of negatives. And I think it's certainly a question for the government that maybe down the road that they will look at. And they certainly are monitoring certain countries now at the moment to see how it's working out there. And I know cannabis is one drug that they're certainly looking at the possibility of legalizing in the future. But as I said, for time purposes, I won't stay on that, but we will be something that we'll come back to in future podcasts, that's for sure. Okay, Georgia, your next one.
My last question is, what should I do if someone offers me drugs?
Okay. I suppose I'm going to start that answer with just one word, and that is prepare. And you may wonder what am I on about there? And I suppose you have to remember that you're not alone. It's easy to think you're the only one who's not tried drugs, as many young people feel that they're the one that actually stands out because they don't take drugs, or they haven't experimented, or they haven't tried it. But again, from the National Research Board here in Ireland, the statistics would show that the majority of young people don't take drugs and don't experiment with drugs. And that's something that's very important to highlight, I suppose, because, you know, young people get quite a bad rap at times between the media and that. So I think it's very important to say that most young people do not take drugs, and often if they experiment, they don't move on to an addiction. So that's very important as well. But for you, or for anyone listening, I suppose, preparing yourself for the possibility that one day you will be offered drugs. And I think in Ireland, that's certainly a guarantee that we are very few of our young people will get through their teenage years, or certainly up into 2021, without being in a situation where they will be offered drugs. I think that's a safe statement to make. So I suppose it's just like the way you work out where you stand on issue like sex, drugs, alcohol. So you know your own mind first. So, you know, I would say to anybody who has never thought of the answer to this question, this is an opportunity to just make up your own mind. I think when you have your own mind made and you're not caught on the hop, it makes it easier to stay true to yourself rather than being disappointed should you experiment. Prepare yourself. So think about how you'd like to respond when someone offers you drugs, so you know what to say. So again, you're not caught off guard. And I try to understand who's offering you the drugs and why. So if they're friends, they should understand, certainly, if you say no. People you don't know very well may expect something in return. And this is an issue that we have quite a lot now with young people, where we have many young people getting caught up by getting drugs and being told you can pay another time if they don't have the money. Then within days or weeks, these people come back looking for favors, and that can often be taking a package and delivering it for them. You know, the package will most certainly have drugs in it, but as that young person is unknown at that time to the Gardaí, they will probably get it delivered. But once that happens, once you're at their mercy, because you've gone and broke the law with them, you're part of their drug gang, you're part of their delivery service, and you know, basically, according to them, they'd be thinking of you as a drug courier without even considering the consequences. So it's very, very important to prepare yourself for the opportunity that somebody may well ask you, because we certainly believe that most young people between school and third level college will be in a situation where they're offered drugs for sure. And I suppose saying no firmly and clearly without making a big deal about it doesn't have to be a big row, it doesn't have to be an argument, it just has to be a very strong firm no. It's something that we encourage all young people to even practice, how to say no. It seems like a very silly exercise at times, but you know, it's something that sometimes we're not just good at making a strong no, or saying no that people realize that we mean it. And again, try to focus on your own opinion of yourself. What do you think of yourself? You know, don't let yourself down. In the end, that's all that matters. If you can stay true to yourself in the long run, you will certainly be a lot happier in life. And if, you know, if you prepare to say no and you're determined you're not going to take drugs, you know, that's the best way to do it, is to prepare yourself and start off the way you mean to go on, for sure. Okay, thank you, Georgia, for those questions. And I'm going to move on to Evelyn.
Okay, so my first question is, do people mix the drugs they take?
Yes, they do. Using more drug per session is often called polydrug use. So this would involve using more than one drug at a time. And this includes alcohol and prescription drugs as well. Most drug users will take one particular drug. So if somebody's going out the weekends, they may well just smoke, or they may well take cocaine. But often when it becomes like a party situation or bars, they would also be mixing alcohol as well. So if you could imagine a stimulant, so we have different types of drugs, stimulants, depressants, and somebody takes a stimulant drug and then drinks alcohol, which is a depressant drug. And people don't realize sometimes that alcohol is a depressant drug, because we use it so often for celebrations and parties, and yet it is known as a depressant drug, and certainly people who would have an addiction to alcohol would certainly tell you that they would be very much often very down and depressed. So if you're taking a stimulant and a depressant like cocaine and alcohol as an example, it puts extra strain on the body. So it means you can have one drug trying to speed up your system, so your heart rate is going at an abnormal rate faster, and the depressant may well be trying to slow it down. So you've got a situation where you have these two drugs fighting within your system. And that's where sometimes, you know, if people have underlying conditions, it can cause a lot of issues. And unfortunately, that's where, you know, we do hear of people who have consumed alcohol or consumed any two drugs, you know, have often lost their lives, whether it be in nightclub settings or party settings, because their body just hasn't been able to take it. So alcohol used with a substance like MDMA or ecstasy, that can mask the effects, leading to a person to take more because one cancels out the other, where you may not be feeling the actual effect of the ecstasy, but it is in your system and it's causing, it's doing what it's meant to do, but the alcohol is mixing with it. And your body, again, we're back to the brain giving it these signals. And when the brain gives these signals to take more, that's where we could actually end up with an accidental overdose. And that can lead to many things, including death. So yeah, so I suppose mixing drugs is quite common. And it's something that we would certainly try to discourage. If people are going to take drugs, that they would at least maybe just stick to the one drug at a time and give their bodies an opportunity to recover from that. Okay, Evelyn, your next one.
How will I know if my drink gets spiked? What should I do?
Okay, this is an issue that's coming up quite a bit, unfortunately, where a lot of people's drinks are getting spiked. And I suppose the one thing, the only way you can actually avoid ever having your drink spiked is by having with you at all times. And that's quite difficult if you're out and about and, you know, you're in a bar, in a club, you know, going to the toilet or that. So it's very important, I suppose, that we're all looking out for each other, that you're minding drinks for each other if somebody has to go to the bathroom or that. But if you think your drink has been spiked, what we would say is take action immediately. Your priority is to protect yourself from further harm. So some of the effects that you would look out for would be drowsiness or lightheadedness, difficulty speaking, slurring your words, difficulty concentrating on things. Your balance, you could have a loss of balance, blackouts can occur, or memory loss. Memory loss is usually a really big issue with people getting spiked, and unfortunately then people can become unconscious. So I suppose many of those symptoms can also be those of somebody who's taking too much alcohol. You know, we would often see people maybe having struggling with their balance or memory loss or slurring their words. So that's where often people think they just had too much drink, where they've actually been spiked. So I suppose it's very important to know your limits. If you're feeling very, you know, basically feeling drunk, and you know you're not because you haven't drank as much as you should, you know, that's something that would certainly cause alerts that we would look out for. Also, you cannot be sure how your body will react to an unknown substance, because these date rape drugs, you know, they're all very, very different, and, you know, we don't know the ingredients of them, we don't know the strengths of them. So what you would need to do is get help from someone you trust, first of all. I suppose that would be a friend or relative. The manager of the place you're in would be the first place that you know, I would think you would go towards. The security staff, call the Gardaí, and certainly look for some healthcare professional, whether that's going to the doctor or hospital if need be, depending on how bad you are. And, you know, what is very important is something that very few people think, because it is quite a dangerous situation to be in, and it can be frightening at times. But if somebody still has the drink that they left, that they think was spiked, that's very important that we keep hold of it, if possible, because it's first of all important to be able to report it, and then it's very important that we can actually, the health authorities and that, can look at what was put into it and what happened. And I suppose even if you're not sure and it's a false alarm, but somebody just fears that somebody's around their drink and they're just concerned, you know, first of all, do not drink that drink. You know, as expensive as alcohol can be, it's best to put it aside and just throw it down the sink or whatever. Make sure no one else drinks it as well. And I suppose, you know, alert the authorities, talk to somebody that you're with that you think there's a chance it might have happened, so that they can keep an eye on you. And always remember, if it's a false alarm, you know, everybody will be more than happy to hear it's a false alarm. Nobody's going to give out to anybody for thinking they possibly would have been spiked. Okay, thank you, Evelyn. And I'll move on to Kaylee.
Yeah, so my first question is, what are the recovery and the relapse rates for drug addiction?
Okay, that's another difficult question to answer. Like I said earlier on, to get statistics for recovery certainly is a complex issue. Recovery is a very complex issue for many, and relapse is part of the cycle of recovery. Many episodes of treatment is often necessary before somebody can find a successful treatment. Some treatments and interventions and approaches are considered to be effective and others not. Unfortunately, some people may finally hit the rock bottom, because it always says that for people to go to seek help, they have to hit that rock bottom. Many families would often say, well, surely they're at rock bottom now, and that's not the situation. The person who is in addiction has their own rock bottom, and they have to finally get there to actually realize that they need help. Unfortunately, some people may finally hit their rock bottom in the drug taking and decide to present themselves for a recovery program. And depend on the availability or meeting the criteria for a place in a program, because it's not as easy as just walking in and saying, I'd like to get help with my addiction. It can often take weeks or months to get a position on a recovery program. It often takes a number of attempts as well to find a recovery program that suits you. And this is unfortunate, because many give up after their first attempt, thinking it's not going to work for me. They failed, when it really can be just a case of that program didn't suit them. It doesn't suit all individuals, and it's very important that we try to encourage people to try something different. Many addictions are left, such as alcohol, which is the one drug, regardless of it being legal, that has the biggest strain on their health service. We often spend too much time concentrating on illegal drugs, when the biggest harm to our families is readily available and legally sold. The probation services have some examples, especially around harmful drinking. And 1.35 million Irish people between the age of 18 and 75 are actually classified as harmless drinkers. That's quite a lot of people. 75% of all alcohol consumed in Ireland, in going back to 2013, this was done as part of a binge drinking session. And finally, 1 in 4 deaths of young men aged between 15 and 39 are related to alcohol in some way. So the statistics are quite high. It's very, very, very difficult to get recovery rates, because a lot of the recovery centres don't release them, because they don't like it to be, whether it's a competition between different centres, who has the most, who has the best. As I said, a lot of the centres do work very differently, and they would, they may have a program that suits somebody, and certainly that program will not suit another person. So as for rates of recovery, it's very difficult to get, but rates of relapse certainly would be high, because it's often seen that somebody will relapse at least once before they manage to give up their addiction. Okay, your next question, Katie.
What facilities are available to help recovering addicts?
There are many drug and alcohol services in Ireland. Some are run by charities, including religious charities. The Catholic Church and the HSE would be involved in quite a lot as well. Drugs.ie, which is a great website, they would have lists for each county available on their website. So that would tell you all the different types of services that are available on their website. And like I said earlier, there are many different types of treatments. The main problem in Ireland is there's never enough spaces. And I think this is the biggest problem. And not everyone meets the criteria of a certain addiction centre. Also, if someone decides they're ready for that treatment, they make that brave step in their journey, and they will be met with delay most of the time, or told they have to provide maybe a certain amount of clean blood or urine samples to enter the treatment. And that delay in a place becoming available, I suppose, for that place to become available, the delay can lead to a relapse, where somebody feels like they're ready and they're told to go away and produce these clean urine samples, and it's just so hard for them to get back out into the world, out into their normal everyday life, and not take drugs in the hope that they will get into a rehab place in a few weeks or months time. So it really would be great if we had somewhere that just was available for people when they really needed it. Certainly. And I suppose this is something in series 2 of the series we will be covering, with a representative of a drug treatment agency, because there's a lot of interest, certainly when I go to schools, there's a lot of interest from young people around what help is out there. So we will cover that in a further episode as well. Your next question, Kelly.
So my final question is, what are the laws in Ireland and can you be arrested for using drugs?
The laws have changed quite recently. Depending on the circumstances, the matter may be dealt with under an adult caution scheme if the offence happened after December 14th, 2020. If it is dealt with under the adult cautioning scheme, you will receive a caution and not be prosecuted. And this is very important, because we would have had periods where we would have had young people, especially, who were receiving prosecutions for drugs that they were using themselves. They weren't for sale. And this, in later life, would cause a lot of issues when it came to, employment or visas for travel, where they would have an actual record. So the Gardaí must consider a number of factors to see if the scheme is appropriate for the alleged offence. So it's not everybody will be given an adult caution scheme. In particular, consideration must be given to the type, the quantity and the value of the drug, and whether in all the circumstances the offence disclosed amounts to simple possession. So simple possession would probably mean for their own use, for personal use. If anybody is caught with drugs and it looks to be a certain amount, the guards will probably have in their own kind of minds and heads a certain amount of drugs that they would put down as enough for somebody to have personal use. And they would also have then after that, then for if it looks like somebody is drug dealing and trying to claim it as personal use, that they would not come in under the adult caution scheme. It would be a prosecution. So that's So that would mostly be around cannabis. Possession of all other controlled substances incurs a penalty or fine and or imprisonment for up to 1 year on conviction, and imprisonment for up to 7 years. Again, we're dependent on the drug and we're dependent on how much of it has been got. Possession for the purpose of sale or supply incurs penalties ranging from imprisonment, and this can be for life or an unlimited fine on conviction. So that can be purely up to a judge exactly what the fine can be, but certainly people have got life imprisonment or certainly very large custodial sentences for possession and for sale. It's also an offence to grow cannabis plants, and this is something that not everyone realises. They think it's a plant and all I'm doing is just growing a plant. But there is a conviction for growing cannabis. You could be liable for a fine or a prison sentence of no longer than 12 months. And again, this would be the difference between somebody who's grown something in their bedroom or somebody who has a grow house or a warehouse out in the country. So again, it would all be down to how much. And of course, as well, if the person has been caught before, might have a record as well. On conviction of indictment for growing these plants, the court can then decide on the fine and the prison sentence. And that can be up to 14 years for growing cannabis plants. So again, while people think it's only a plant and it's something that's very, very safe, 14 years is quite a chunk of someone's life. And again, that would be the high end of it. That would be somebody who would have a grow house, and they'd be growing quite a lot of it for sale, certainly for someone to get 14 years. And again, if the court decides you're liable for both, quantities and previous record would come into play. So if this isn't the first time that you somebody has been caught growing cannabis for sale, they would certainly, their previous record would come into it, and that's where much higher sentences would come in to play. Okay, thank you, Kaylee. And just to say thank you to Katie, Georgia, Evelyn and Kaylee for joining us here today. And again, thank you to the Mooncoin Parish Drug Awareness for making us so welcome. Thank you for listening to Leave Your Mark podcast, and don't forget to subscribe for future episodes in 2023. Thank you.
If you've been affected by any of the issues raised in this episode, please see the links in the description to find out how you can get in touch with the Irish Bishops Drugs Initiative. This episode was presented by Darren Butler of IBDI. It was produced by Darren Butler and Mark Byrne. The sound engineer was Mark Byrne.